German philosopher Hegel advocated the concept that ultimate truth is found by proposing a thesis or an idea, considering the antithesis or an opposite idea, and then finding a synthesis of the truth. Hegel said the truth is found neither in the thesis nor in the antithesis, but rather that ultimate truth is found in the emergent synthesis which reconciles the two together. Our Lord recognized the need for blending opposites. He knew that his disciples would face a difficult and a hostile world, where they would constantly confront the recalcitrance of political officers and the intransigence of those who would try to protect the existing order of things. He knew that his disciples would meet cold and arrogant men whose heart had been hardened by the long-time traditionalism of their fathers. And so he said to these disciples as he sent them forth, in that passage which we heard this morning from the 10th chapter of Matthew's Gospel, "Behold, I send you forth as sheep in the midst of wolves." And he gave them a formula: "Be therefore as wise as serpents and as harmless as doves." It is fairly difficult to imagine that any person could have simultaneously the characteristic of the serpent and the dove. But this is exactly what Jesus expects. We must combine the toughness of the serpent and the softness of the dove. A tough mind and a tender heart. Let us consider first the need for a tough mind. Characterized by incisive thinking, appraisal, decisive judgment, the tough mind is penetrating. It breaks through all of the myths, abolishes the legends, sifts the truth from the false. The tough mind is the one that is always discerning. The person who has a tough mind is strong, has a firmness of purpose, has a solidness of commitment. Who would doubt that this is not one of the greatest needs we have? Rarely do we find those who are willing to engage in hard crystal thinking. There is almost a universal quest for easy solutions and half-baked answers. Nothing pains some people more than being required to think. The prevalency toward soft-mindedness today is found in our gullibility. Take our attitude toward advertisements. Sometimes we are led to purchase a particular product because a television or radio advertisement pronounces that it is better than any other of its kind. And advertisers have learned that most people are soft-minded, but they capitalize on this susceptibility with skillful means. And we are manipulated. This undue gullibility is also seen in the fact that there are many people who feel that anything they read in the printed word is truth. They do not recognize that there are all types of channels of information. And our minds are constantly being invaded by channels of half-truth and prejudice and false facts. One of the great needs that we have is to be lifted above this morass of false propaganda. Another area where some people are soft-minded is the fact that there are persons who are willing to embrace all kinds of superstition. Minds that are continually invaded by irrational fears. who, if they thought it through, would realize the folly of their ways. Like climbing on an elevator of a tall building and looking at the numbers on the board and seeing that the numbers jump from 12 to 14 because most people do not want to either live or work on a 13th floor. But how foolish. Just because the number 14 is there doesn't mean that it's the 14th floor. It's still the 13th floor up in the ground. Some silly superstition about the number 13 caused people to become soft-minded. A soft-minded person also fears change. He feels secure in the status quo and has an almost morbid fear of the new. Soft-minded person always wants to freeze the moment and hold it forever. Never ceasing to hold on to the nation. Soft-mindedness invades religion. It's why sometimes religion becomes dogmatic passion. Because there is an unwillingness to change, an unwillingness to consider that God might still be revealing himself, there are those who put an impenetrable stone wall in the place of the seekers of truth. And the historical philological criticism of the Bible is considered as soft-minded and blasphemous. And reason is always looked upon as a type of corruption of the faculties of mind. Perhaps we ought to add a beatitude with these persons in mind. Blessed are the pure in ignorance. Fallacious. Not only are we soft-minded at times, but we also find that there is a conflict often raised between science and religion. Because soft-minded people don't realize that there really isn't a conflict at all. That science investigates and religion interprets. That science deals with facts and religion deals with values. And sometimes we fail to put the two together properly. One of the interesting things that comes out of the study of Nazi Germany is the fact that Adolf Hitler realized that soft-mindedness was so prevalent among those who followed him. And he once said, "I use emotion for the many. I reserve reason for the few." And in Mein Kampf, Hitler wrote, "By means of shrewd lies, unremittingly repeated, it is possible to believe even that heaven is hell and hell heaven. The greater the lie, the more readily believed." But we must not stop simply with the cultivation of a tough mind. We must also look at a tender heart. Because tough-mindedness without a tender heart is like leaving one's life in a perpetual winter, devoid of all of the freshness and beauty of springtime and summer. What is more tragic than to see a person who has risen to the disciplined heights of tough-mindedness, a person who can reason clearly, a person who can think things through logically, a person who can pursue truth with clarity, and yet to find that that person has deteriorated into being completely hard-hearted. The hard-hearted person never loves. The hard-hearted person simply engages in a crass utilitarianism where he only sees life for what it can do for him and how it can serve his needs. He never experiences the beauty of friendship because he's too cold to feel affection for another and he's too self-centered to share another joy or thought. Like an isolated island, no outpouring of love that links him with the mainland of humanity. A hard-hearted person also lacks the capacity to genuine compassion. A hard-hearted person never sees person as person. Rather, simply mere objects, impersonal calls in the whole machinery of life, never really coming to grips with the feelings of other persons about them. And the deadly life of hit and miss, chance and circumstance, he simply sees other individuals as numbers in a regiment, as members of a whole army, as troops to be used. This person never sees each individual, his hurts, his joys, his sorrows, his pain. Because it's hard-hearted. That isn't the way in which he lives. But Jesus reminds us that the good life, the whole life, the complete life, demands that we be wise as serpents, but as harmless as doves. Tough minds, tender hearts. And we need to see how this applies to what Jesus taught us. Regard to all of our human relations. Because as we read our call to worship this morning, we heard Jesus saying to you, it has been said of old, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemies and pray for those who hurt you. That's a tough effort. That's a demanding morality. That's something the world, only in a few places, has taught us. And we need to realize that it's the essence of the Christian gospel. And we need to quit avoiding it by saying that it only applies to international relations, or it only applies to some by-and-by, pie-in-the-sky type of existence. It applies to you, and it applies to me, and it applies to here, and it applies to now. We need to begin to realize that God expects us to live out His creed. His creed was given to us in the love of Christ, manifest for us, and in the type of love that we manifest for all. Jesus never asked us to love our enemies in the same way we love our dearest, our loved ones. And this is why it is very careful that we come to grips with what it means to have a tough mind and a tender heart. Because the agape love of the New Testament is a love of creative goodwill that starts in the mind. It starts in the process of a thinking relationship, where creatively we realize that even though there are those who are difficult to love, our mind, our reason, what God has given us tells us that it is an imperative that we establish the opportunities and the bridges by which we can. So we, in our tough-mindedness, must realize that it moves into the realm of the tender-heartedness. We must note that this commandment is only possible for a Christian. Because only the grace of Jesus Christ enables here. And when we realize that, we come to grips with the fact that each of us must constantly examine ourselves to see if really we are living by the Christian ethic or by the ethic which society around us would dictate. Because there are those who would like to gloss over this part of the gospel and act like it really didn't exist. Most important of all, we must note that this commandment does not involve allowing people to do as they like. It involves this type of tough-mindedness, which constantly lifts up the positive elements of the morality of Jesus Christ, the Christian ethic. It constantly calls people to be great. It is not simply that we attain a sense of relationship at all costs, but that we attain it on the basis of the tough mind, the tender heart. that we have seen in our own generation is an example of this. And it may be the synthesis which Hegel talked about. And the idea of the tough mind and the tender heart. The civil rights movement in America in the last 25 years has brought about the synthesis that was first advocated by Jesus Christ, followed closely by Mahatma Gandhi, and lived out in our generation by Martin Luther King Jr. and those who followed him. It is the doctrine of passive nonviolence. And we have lived through a revolution without realizing. This nonviolent resistance, which we saw exhibited in so many different ways, helped us to understand the full stature of the Christian gospel. We need to realize that those who fell by it were not those who sicked the police, were not those who stood aside and suffered the injustices and the inhumanity and the hurt and the pain. They were those who sicked the police dogs, and those who put on their hoods, and those who did all the other acts of injustice. The world is being transformed in our generation, and we may be too blind in our own traditions to recognize. We need to recognize one thing for certain. Our God is a God of justice. Our God has a tough mind and a tender heart. And when the slumbering giants of injustice emerge in the earth, we need to know that there is a God of power who can cut them down like the grass of the field. We need to know that there is a God of mercy who sees his children hurting. And we need to know that in every generation, God raises those who will lead his people. And we need to what we have seen in our own time is that when days grow dark and nights grow dreary, God is still alive. And for those of us who have accepted Jesus Christ as Lord, the imperative to be tough-minded and tender-hearted is still before us. And may God grant us the willingness to walk. I close with this statement. Dr. King was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize in 1964, and in his address before those who had gathered in Stockholm, he said, "I am mindful that only yesterday in Birmingham, Alabama, our children crying out for brotherhood were answered with fire hoses, snarling dogs, and even death. I am mindful that only yesterday in Philadelphia, Mississippi, young people seeking to secure the right to vote were brutalized and murdered. Therefore, I must ask why this prize is awarded to a movement which is beleaguered and committed to unrelenting struggle, to a movement which has not won the very peace and brotherhood which is the essence of the Nobel Prize. After contemplation, I conclude that this award, which I receive on behalf of the movement, is a profound recognition that nonviolence is the answer to the crucial political and racial questions of our time. The need for man to overcome oppression without resorting to violence." And Martin Luther King. We thank you for reminding us of the nature of our faith. Help us, O God, that we may live by the effort of Jesus Christ. We pray that we may have that courageous strength that has been among us in those that you have trained. We ask that it be.